The Resurgence of New Thought. The power of positive thinking isn't a new idea. There are books and infomercials, websites and YouTube channels devoted to the notion that positive thinking can translate into more wealth and/or better health. Back in the 1800s, a similar belief system took root here in Maine. It was based on the belief that our thoughts have the power to change our reality. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Phineas Quimby is considered the founder of New Thought. Today, we're going to learn about this unique individual and the history of New Thought, as well as the psychology behind some of its principles and how they are practiced today. Have you ever been convinced something happened because you willed it to happen? Maine Calling explores the New Thought movement. But first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. New Thought originated in the 1800s, based on the writings of Phineas Quimby, who lived in Belfast, Maine. The New Thought movement centers around the idea that your mind has the power to change your outcomes in life. We're going to learn more about New Thought, the origins of this system, and how its influence lives on in our popular thinking today. Joining me in our studio, the Reverend Duncan Newcomer. He's an historian, psychotherapist, author, poet, and labyrinth facilitator, and an ordained minister for the United Church of Christ. The Reverend Patricia Bessie is here. She's a Unity minister and master prosperity teacher, church consultant, spiritual counselor, and certified life coach. And Dr. Amy Wood is a licensed psychologist, coach, mediator, and author of the book Life Your Way. As always, we want to hear from you. What do you think about how positive thinking can influence outcomes? Do you have any examples of how this has or hasn't applied in your life? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here today. What an interesting topic for this summer Friday. I'm going to start with you, Reverend Newcomer. Most people today have never heard of Phineas Quimby, right, but his influence was vast, and many spiritual thinkers who came afterwards were influenced by him. Tell us a little bit about him. Who was he? Where did he come with this up with this idea of new thought?
Well, the way he came up with it is really interesting. There's a good story to tell about a horse carriage ride that he took. But he was a blacksmith and a clockmaker. He moved from New Hampshire to Belfast, Maine in 1804, and he lived there until 1866. And he was a little guy, 125 pounds, very distinguished looking. And he became, after doing a lot of work with his blacksmith shop, clockmaking work, became very interested in how the mind affects health. And he became what was called a healer, and he traveled around New England. And then he had a practice here in Portland. For about 20 years, he saw about 12,000 people. He would charge them $1 to $5, and if they didn't like the results, he would give them their money back. He was a very sincere and loving man.
So summarize, if you can. I know, sure. I know it's hard to summarize because there's books and books of his writing, yeah, but, you know, is New Thought the idea that one can heal oneself by thinking what we would say positive today?
Yes, yes. And that was a new idea. And the way he came, can I tell you the story about how he came to it?
Yes, please
do. He had tuberculosis. He was being treated by doctors. They were giving him a mercury pill. It was killing him. All his teeth were falling out. And he had heard that a good horseback ride might be good for health. So he was so down that he couldn't ride his horse, but he got in his carriage and he got his horse out in the fields around Belfast, and he couldn't make his horse move. So he ran with the horse, and then he saw a farmer friend and said, "Would you help me get my horse to go back to town?" The man whipped the horse, and the horse went lickety-split back into Belfast, and when Phineas Quimby got to his home on Pearl Street, he said, my spirits are better. I feel better. Now, this is what he did. He didn't think, I need more horses, I need a better carriage, I need to do this every day at the Y. He said, it's my thoughts. My thoughts are making me well. And so he began to, he's the Alexander Graham Bell of healing. he taught us a new way to communicate. You could ring up your body with your brain. And he started working with people about how you can think things about your health that will actually make a difference. And it made a difference for him.
And you said at the time it was really radical thinking.
That's
this
right.
was really
right.
something that we've come to sort of take for granted that that sorts of metaphysical people, maybe you go to a yoga class, all mm-hmm. sorts of people are talking about healing oneself by having a different attitude or thinking about one's body different. I want to bring the other guests into the conversation. Dr. Wood, how well known is Phineas Quimby to people like you who are counseling people today?
Well, I will admit I had never heard of him until I researched the topic for today. I know a lot about New Thought, but I've never heard it called that before. I've heard the law of attraction, which is related to New Thought, meaning that how you think attracts aligned circumstances into your life. So if you're a glass half full person, you tend to attract positive experiences. Life is easier than if you're a half glass empty person. And everything is harder for you.
So some of the thinking that has come from New Thought, even though we don't know about Phineas Quimby anymore, some of his ideas live on in our practice today.
Absolutely. And I would say more than ever before, we're practicing these ideas because they really work.
I want to ask you, Reverend Bessie, how does the Unity Church incorporate what was then called New Thought?
So I can pick up with Phineas Quimby because the Fillmores, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, who are the co-founders of Unity, got their teachings from a person who had been taught from Phineas Quimby two generations out. He was very instrumental in Mary Baker Eddy's work as Christian Scientists. And then...
Is this Keller? Oh, no, go on. Go on.
This is Phineas Quimby.
Right.
Was instrumental in Mary Baker Eddy, who is the founder of Christian Science. And then she had Emma Curtis Hopkins working with her. And Emma Curtis Hopkins left her and went to Chicago. And so the Fillmores got connected to Emma Curtis Hopkins after Myrtle and Childs had gone. Myrtle had tuberculosis also. And had been given a death sentence. And she was a young mother. And so they went to a talk that Dr. E.B. Weeks gave. And he said in that talk, you do not inherit illness. And that was the turning point for Myrtle. And so she then and Charles started working with Emma Curtis Hopkins. And that is where Unity got started, because Myrtle, after talking to her body daily, talking to every cell in her body and expressing gratitude for it, after a period of time, she was healed of tuberculosis. And people found out about that. And they started coming to her and wanting to know what she had done. And it was through prayer and meditation that she was able to do this. And that's what started Unity with Silent Unity, which is the oldest 24-hour, 7-day-a-week prayer line in the country, in the world, I think.
Mm. So I want to bring up something that seems like a little bit of a non sequitur, but I think you all will nod and know where I'm going. We have a presidential candidate named Marianne Williamson, yeah. who writes about spiritual things. She's a best-selling author. And she preaches that every person in the world is God, and yes. we are all connected by a single soul residing in our bodies. This is what Phineas Quimby thought, right?
He believed that we are healed by a truth that's within us mm-hmm. and not outside of us. Mm-hmm. And actually, you have an interesting story to tell about Marianne Williamson preaching in a Unity Church.
Right. Marianne was a minister of a Unity Church for, I think, probably 5 or 6 years in Warren, Michigan. And so not only is she was teaching Unity, but she also, her books are based on Course in Miracles. And it is, the premise behind that is that we all have that same spark of divinity within us that was in, that's in everyone. And that's that divine part of us. If we're made as the Bible says, after the image, after the likeness and image of God, then we have to have that within us. So everybody at the core of their being is inherently good.
So we can draw a direct line from Phineas Quimby to Marianne Williamson.
Sure. The politics of this is interesting because Quimby was influenced by Mesmer, the hypnotist from the 18th century France.
The word mesmerized.
Being mesmerized, right. And the whole Mesmer movement was very strong around the time of the French Revolution.
Hmm.
And so radical politics and these ideas seem to have gone together. Phineas Quimby was at the peak of his work here in the 1850s when the Transcendentalist movement was happening, the abolitionist movement was happening. So positive politics and new thought seemed to go hand in hand.
Yes.
I want to come back to you, Dr. Wood. What aspects of what Phineas Quimby and his followers called New Thought do you think are now incorporated into the way therapists practice?
Well, first of all, I think that no matter what kind of therapy you're practicing, it all comes down to what we're talking about today, which is therapy is all about changing your perspective. That's ultimately what you get out of it as a client in psychotherapy. But I would say more specifically, when you're talking about therapies designed to focus on changing thoughts to bring about different results in life. Cognitive behavioral therapy is what we think of as psychologists. And that's really about working with a client to figure out what thoughts that they are having that are getting in the way of things in their life and how to change those thoughts to get better results. So for example, let's say someone is constantly having the thought, you know, I just can't cope with what life throws at me. They're not going to get very far. Whereas someone who thinks, you know what, I can cope with whatever comes my way, that person is going to feel more confident, they're going to be less stressed, they're going to be better at getting through life. So that's a quick summary for you of what cognitive behavioral therapy is all about.
It's interesting to me because, Reverend Newcomber, Phineas Quimby felt like he cured himself of tuberculosis by changing his thoughts. You're not talking about a medical diagnosis that's you're talking about mental health. You're not talking about something like multiple sclerosis or tuberculosis. You're talking about mental illness. What I just want to get back to you, Dr. Reverend Newcomber, about what did he think New Thought could heal and what did he think New Thought couldn't heal?
When he finished his carriage ride, he said, I am the very idea I've been looking for. So what he meant was that you don't need to get the idea of what's wrong with you from your minister or your doctor. You can get the idea of what's right about you from your own mind. Mm. And that would be unlimited. There would be nothing that he would have not wanted you to try to heal. Because there's a truth, he would sometimes call it the Christ or the science, there's a truth within you that is healing about any particular thing that you might feel is ill. So we see this now in heart transplant operations. If the people believe that it's going to work, the success rates, according to a Harvard Medical School study, go up. If they don't believe in it, they go down. So the belief is even deeper than the affirmation or the thought. And that's also true with clients and people in churches. If you believe that this is good, it will have a good effect on you.
So let's turn that around, though. If bad things happen to you, does New Thought say that you did it to yourself?
They do, and that's one of the great difficulties with this. There's a book I want to mention called One Simple Idea by Mitch Horowitz. It gives a great history of this movement, and he also gives some critique of it. And what he says near the end is that we live under many laws, physics, biology, economics, including the laws of our mind. And it's very easy to get into feeling guilty about why am I giving myself this cancer with all my bad thoughts? It's a very powerful concept we're working with, and it has dangers. So his solution is to say there are several reasons why we have what we have.
Mm-hmm. Pat, did you want to weigh in on that?
I do, because we hear this a lot. And what I see that as is metaphysical malpractice. When we are saying, well, what in your thinking caused this? Because that is sometimes what people do. And that is not helpful. That is not supportive. That's not compassionate. And it is also it's also an opportunity to look at what are some of the belief systems that you are holding on to that you can shift to make this a different experience. Because we're going to come up against many, many things in our day-to-day life. And what I see our belief system is for, it's like having a spiritual tool bag that when you come up against something that is challenging, that you have something in your tool bag that you can bring out and use to get you through that. And it goes back to the half full glass or the half empty glass. If I come from a perspective of, okay, so this is here, what is the solution? Rather than this is here, oh my God, what am I going to do? I'm going to have very different results. So I think using our thoughts and creating the thoughts that we want to see happen in our life is what we try to help people to do, to look at what is it that you keep saying over and over again. It's not the random ones that go through. We're going to have tons of random thoughts. But it's the ones that we hold on to and keep talking and keep thinking about over and over, because those are the ones that are going to produce after their kind.
All right. On some level, though, when you start thinking about new thought and that your thoughts can change you, it starts sounding a little kooky. Mm-hmm. Is there kind of a kooky side to this?
Yes. Yeah, a dangerously kooky side to it. One of the things that both, at least in my opinion, both Phineas Quimby and Mary Baker Eddy had a deep concept of God. Mm-hmm. And the positive God really is a source of love and healing that is a corrective to the kooky, goofy things you might want to do with your own thoughts. There was a tribe of Indians that believed that the white man's bullets wouldn't go through them. They had a ghost dance. And so they were wiped out when they danced in front of the cavalry out in the West during the frontier days, because it was a kooky idea. Mm. It wasn't true.
When I was reading about New Thought and Phineas Quimby, so many words kept popping up that we use today, and one is psychosomatic.
Exactly.
He called his practice psychosomatic. Yeah. And today we say, gosh, I don't know if I don't know if I'm having a tummy ache or if this is just psychosomatic because I don't want to, go into that crowd of people or something. Is the way that we use the word today the same way he used the word?
I think so. I think he began to say, there's something in my psyche, my brain, that is affecting my soma, my body. And if I can get a good dialogue going and find out a deeper truth about myself, I will have a psychosomatic healing experience.
And Dr. Wood, is this related to the placebo effect we talk about?
Oh, certainly. I think if you believe something is going to work, like if you take a medication that really has nothing in it, it is placebo, and you believe that it might work because you don't know that, it can have positive effects. Not always, but generally that's
some
how it
works. Doctors will actually prescribe placebos as placebo. You take it and you know it's a placebo, but nonetheless, you get better. It's very powerful stuff.
We are talking about Maynard in the 1800s, Phineas Quimby, Phineas Parkhurst Quimby, called Park, the New Thought Movement and its Influence Today. If you'd like to join our conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from the Lunder Foundation, in support of the Colby College Museum of Art, always free and open to all.
Back in 1939, a scientist named Homer Dudley unveiled a machine he called the Voter. It replicated human speech, sort of.
Helen, will you have the voter say, she saw me?
The quest to recreate the human voice, it's a puzzle scientists are still trying to solve. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's coming up today between 4 and 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, actress Maggie Gyllenhaal on the compromises women have made in Hollywood and in so many other walks of life.
Many women have been asked to compromise themselves in much subtler ways and have done it. But think about ways in which you look back and you go, oh, how did I like laugh at that joke or stay in that meeting or whatever.
Maggie Gyllenhaal, next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
And that's tomorrow afternoon at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Understanding the History and Applications of New Thought. Joining me, the Reverend Patricia Bessie, a Unity minister, spiritual counselor, and life coach. Dr. Amy Wood, psychologist, mediator, and author. And the Reverend Duncan Newcomer, historian, psychotherapist, author, poet, and ordained minister. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. And I am going to start with a tweet from Martin. He says, I make a conscious effort to walk around with a smile on my face, and I think it genuinely does help me feel better and stay positive. Dr. Wood, is he onto something?
He definitely is. Actually, many studies have been done to show that just by smiling, like if you're on the phone having a conversation, you feel better when you're talking to that other person. And these studies are done with people who, let's say, are in sales, where they're trying to persuade someone to do something. And the smile helps them to be more convincing because they feel more confident.
A tweet from Lucy. When I was younger, whenever I was feeling down and discouraged, my mom would always tell me, be your own best friend. I used to roll my eyes at this idea, but now that's the advice I give to my friends and myself. It works. And a Facebook comment from Briggs. What a wonderful topic and program. The link between attitude, spirit, and health is strong. Your thoughts determine or affect all aspects of life. New thought, I believe, has always adapted to each era and place. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
Ronald Reagan was a great believer in this attitude, and his slogan was, nothing is impossible. Mm-hmm. And that changed American politics. You don't have politicians now being as somber as, say, Jimmy Carter was.
Joining us on the line now, John S. Haller. He is the author of The History of New Thought and is a professor of history and medical humanities at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. Thanks for calling in, Professor Haller.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Glad to be part of this.
Why do you think it's important for people to know about Phineas Quimby and about New Thought?
Well, first of all, I'd say that New Thought is a very elusive term. I'm surprised that I would be surprised if many of your listeners ever heard the term very much. But it does espouse a philosophy of life, and it certainly does represent a cultural movement that has affected millions of people, and both in the past and certainly in the present. As a philosophy, it is very idealistic, very optimistic, and to be sure, it's transformative for a lot of people. It's also eclectic, and by that I mean it draws from liberal Christianity, from transcendentalism, spiritualism, even some non-Western philosophy. And it includes what I would call elements of pseudoscience, meaning various wannabe sciences like mesmerism and phrenology and psychometry that tried very hard to be legitimized during the late 19th and early 20th century.
Professor Haller, when you look around today, American culture today, how do you see the influence of New Thought?
Oh, well, of course, we know that it started out as a mind cure movement, but it had both a religious component to it, and it had a secular component to it. When you look at Phineas Quimby, for example, he had people like Mary Baker Eddy, the founder of Christian Science, who was one of his students, and he had someone by the name of Warren Felt Evans, who took a more secular side. And so you can see from the period of Quimby down to the present, you see both a non-denominational component of New Thought, and you also see a secular side of it. And so, for example, you can go into Barnes & Noble and find it under the subject categories of health and fitness, medicine, psychology, self-help. And in each of these categories, it teaches a power of mind as the most important energy source in the universe. And, you can go to the sermons of Joel Osteen or Rick Warren on the religious side. And on the secular side, you can go to Norman Vincent Peale, The Power of Positive Thinking, or Deepak Chopra, Creative Affluence. And all of this creates what the philosopher William James once called a religion of healthy mindedness. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what this is all about.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, John. That's John Haller. He's the author of The History of New Thought and a professor at Southern Illinois University. So many callers coming in. We're going to go to Maddie, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Maddie. Go ahead.
Oh, did you mean Annie?
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I'm loving this show because these ideas are very consistent with the Nietzsche and Buddhist practice I've been doing for 37 years and with the group SGI. And what I really love about it is that when I started my Buddhist practice, I was not able to have any positive thoughts, no matter how hard I tried. It was just, I was just, my thinking was so negative all the time. But our practice is that we do this chanting meditation, Nam-myoho Renge-kyo, and that is what has enabled me to have positive thoughts. So I still use it every day, and I'm able to change my perspective and have positive thoughts, even though my default is still a lot of the times to go right to the negative, but I'm able to change my thinking with the chanting, and it makes all the difference. I really agree with the thoughts on this show. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. Reverend Newcomer.
Your caller might know a word that came to me at the Unitarian Church in Belfast. Shempa, S-H-E-N-P-A, a Buddhist idea of better thoughts. And we had a whole sermon about that one day when I was first learning about Phineas Quimby. We also have a labyrinth in Belfast named after Phineas Quimby. The Friends of the Park built this. They raised $30,000. And people spend time on the labyrinth dealing with their positive and their negative thoughts.
Let's see. We're going to go now to Dr. Robin Ostrander, a psychiatrist with Maine Health. Thanks for calling in, Robin.
Thank you, Jen. Nice to hear from you.
You too. When we talk about the idea that positive thoughts can lead to positive outcomes, even with your health, is there any medical research that backs that up?
Yes. There is one piece that others have spoken to it a little bit today in terms of cognitive behavioral therapy or psychology, looking at the way in which we think about things influences both our emotions, so how we experience things emotionally, and also what we do next, how we behave. But there's an additional branch of psychology called positive psychology that really came about after World War II that tried to flip looking at illness to looking at strength and what allows people to kind of keep integrity and purpose and do well despite chaos and despair and other bad things in life. And so positive psychology has a lot of evidence around what can be sort of a buffer against mental illness in terms of the way in which thinking works.
I understand you've done research on the placebo effect. We mentioned that a little earlier in the program. How does this relate to this idea of belief in good results?
Placebo, I think, is fascinating and really absolutely related. It may be what positive psychology is. There's a placebo researcher named Ted Kapchuk, who's at the Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital in Boston, who I worked with, and really splits up placebo into three different kinds of healing. So when you get a placebo, say you're in a research trial, and you find a benefit, placebo says that that benefit comes from the context of that clinical encounter. So it's been termed interpersonal healing, which is different from a spontaneous healing. Some problems just get better on their own. Or technological healing, which is what they mean if you respond to, say, a surgical procedure or a medication. So placebo is that interpersonal healing, and it can come about in a number of ways. And some of the arguments for what makes placebo work is that it involves a person's expectation of recovery, which you might call hope, or selective attention to kind of positive things that happen after you get this treatment, which we might call positive thinking or optimism. So, you know, there's a long list, but you can pull apart this interpersonal healing and consider it a piece of what any provider would have to offer to someone, as opposed to being sort of fake or noise in a medical treatment context.
Well, so fascinating. Thanks so much for calling in, Robin. That is Dr. Robin Ostrander, a psychiatrist with Maine Medical Center. We're going to go to Rick, who is calling from Kittery. Hi, Rick. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
So I've been listening, and I just recently came back from Nepal and India, and all these ideas about thinking and thought, it's in the West, it's more a matter of discovery, because everybody's going to have the same observations of reality, and eventually somebody's going to say, oh, if I do this, or I think a little bit differently, then I've discovered something new. But in the East, these ideas are tens of thousands of years old, and they've through Vedic and yoga and things like that, and it's just a matter of discovery. So, for instance, when you talk about thought and thinking, and say of human awareness, if it's a yardstick, thought and thinking in the East might be the first inch, but in the West, it's 35 inches of the yardstick. So there's so much more available to us as human beings beyond thinking and thought, and there's just so much awareness that we're just unaware of in the West. That's part and parcel of sort of the experience of people in the subcontinent in the East.
Let me pick up on a piece of that. The idea that looking at reality will reveal truths. One of the striking things about Phineas Quimby was that he was a blacksmith and a clockmaker, not a philosopher. And so he spent a lot of time just looking at things and how they work. And he would see in his iron forge, he would see metal turn into fluid. He was like an alchemist. So the observation of detail is an empirical source of the idea of transformation. And it's absolutely true that in the East, that kind of idealism has a long, long history. What's remarkable about Quimby is that he didn't know anything about that history, and yet he came to this conclusion himself.
Rick, thanks so much for calling. Nate put on Facebook, "This topic is central to one of my favorite quotes. Whether you think you can or think you can't, you're probably right." Henry Ford.
That's one of my favorite quotes, too. I love that quote. That sums it up.
Yeah. Aphorisms and mottos are part of this. When I was first trained to be a psychotherapist, I got myself tested to make sure I wasn't crazy. And the tester said the only thing wrong with Duncan is that Duncan thinks there's something wrong with Duncan. Now, that took a long time to work out. Mm. Beliefs are very strong.
Yes.
Beliefs are stronger than thoughts. And believing that there's something wrong, especially if you grew up Presbyterian, it can be a really serious ordeal. But it's important to be patient and not magical.
Yeah, and I'd like to comment on that, if I can, because so many clients come to me having heard about positive psychology and heard about the power of positive thinking. And in our culture, you know, we're all about quick fixes, and people expect, because they've heard this, you know, in seminars, they've read it in books and blog posts and all sorts of places, that you can just flip a switch and everything will be better just by thinking differently. And I think it's important to understand that we have no control over our thoughts. Our thoughts just flow through us, just like our emotions in response to thoughts do. And it's like a daily practice. you know, you have to wake up every day and say, you know what, I'm going to be an optimist, meaning I'm going to look at the big picture. Some things aren't going well. I can't control everything, but I'm going to focus on what is going well and what I can control. And life is never going to be perfect, but it goes better when you make that a daily practice. And it does take time to change your thinking. It doesn't happen overnight.
Patricia.
Yes, and the same vein as this, I do believe that we have to get to the basic belief system and dismantle, because some of the belief systems that people are carrying are not even their belief systems. They're belief systems that have been given to them as they were growing up or whatever. And so the unworthiness piece is a very big piece that people are dealing with. And also coming, especially to Unity or to any new thought, to believe that they are lovable, to believe that God could love them, is something that many people are carrying of deep, deep wound that's not ever going to happen for them. So I think that's one of the things that we can have. We can't sugarcoat. We can't put something on top of something until we get to the core of it and get that shifted.
If you'd like to join this conversation about new thought, an old idea that has a big influence on a lot of thinking today, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from CMCA in Rockland, featuring artist Dan Mills' exhibition, Human Topographies. Learn more at cmcanow.org. And Ocean View at Falmouth, an active retirement living campus proudly supporting Saturday Afternoon Opera. OceanViewRC.com.
How did the removal of a dam in Maine shape the future of river restoration?
I think that this was the dam removal that was heard around the world.
On Next from the New England News Collaborative, we'll talk about the history of the Edwards Dam 20 years later. We'll also listen to an unusual library.
To come to that realization, once he was able to record the voice, there was no question that that's what he should do.
And visit some holy sites around our region. Please join us.
That's next up today at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
It's been dubbed the Texodus. A rash of Republican congressional retirements have Democrats hopeful.
Texas is the biggest battleground state in the country now.
Can they really turn the Lone Star State blue?
In 2020, if Texas is in play, it means the Democrats already won 40 states.
Next time on Takeaways Politics with Amy Walter from WNYC and PRI.
That's coming up this evening at 7 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, new thought and how its beliefs have regained popularity today. My guests are Amy Wood, who's a psychologist and author, Duncan Newcomer, a historian, minister, and psychotherapist, and Patricia Bessie, a minister, counselor, and life coach. If you'd like to join our conversation, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Before we return to the calls, though, I want to ask you all if this movement, this way of living, could be helpful in our culture right now.
Absolutely. Viktor Frankl, the man that wrote Man's Search for Meaning, talked about how people's attitudes of hope made a total difference in their survivability within the concentration camps. Not that you could survive a camp against the Nazis only with your hope, but if you didn't have hope, you wouldn't survive. So hope as a thought for your life is important in dark times. Abraham Joshua Heschel, the rabbi, once said, a thought has blown the marketplace away. The thought was the Sabbath. There is a powerful thought stronger than the marketplace.
We'll go to Kelly, who's calling from Unity. Hi, Kelly. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm very sympathetic to these ideas. And I'm hearing a lot of undiluted positive about positive thinking, but I need to throw a little bit of cold water on this. I have a couple of anecdotes to share. I feel that there's a danger in that this can lead to blaming the victim or victims of illness self-blaming. And I come to this because my own parents were raised Christian Scientists, Christian Scientists believe that illness is a matter of an error in one's thinking, and that even death or birth is just a transition. My parents had me, and at 6 months I had a bowel obstruction, and the church and their folks wanted them to pray, and it would have led to, they thought it was an error in my parents' thinking.
Mm, Kelly, thank you for sharing this. And we touched on it before, but you said this so clearly. And Reverend Newcomer, this is what you're talking about when you're talking about the danger.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought this up. And it's something to keep on the front burner so that you don't get self-blame.
We'll go to Kevin, who's calling. Let's see here. What am I doing wrong? There we go. Kevin, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going? Just wanted to ask about the influence of Phineas Quimby on Ernest Holmes, who I believe was another Mainer who was a big wheel in the New Thought movement. And also, I wanted to ask, I'm sorry, the second part of my question has to slip my mind. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, we have two Mainers now, big wheels in this movement. What is it about Maine that's producing this unique philosophy? That's all.
It's in the water. there are two books for you to think about. One, Ernest Holmes is featured a lot in One Simple Idea. Mm-hmm. And there's a man in Michigan named Ron Hughes who has a Phineas Quimby website. And he would be able to fill you in on some of the Hughes connections. I think it is the water.
Thanks for your call, Kevin. We'll go to Trish, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Trish. Go ahead.
Hi. I was lucky enough to work with a wonderful psychiatrist in Pittsburgh named Abraham Twerdy. And he was very, very prominent working with alcoholics. And I learned the very simple serenity prayer was a wonderful way to start a day with a positive attitude. And I was wondering if your folks had any, interest or knew about the serenity prayer.
Okay, Pat, go ahead.
Yes, I certainly do know about the Serenity Prayer. And we have a lot of recovery people in our congregation. And that's one. In fact, I've used it many times myself when I get in a place where I'm not sure what I need to do. I just say that over and over again until I get clear of what my next step is. So, yes, that's a very good prayer to use.
For those in our audience who don't know the Serenity Prayer, can you say it by heart?
Yes, I can. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And that last line is the one, the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you, Pat. We'll go to Todd in Hancock. Hi, Todd. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Actually, wisdom was what I was about to bring up. I was struck by Mr. Newcomer's comment about comparing Reagan's positive attitude to Carter's dourness or whatever. And to my mind, Reagan, for all his positive attitude, did great damage to to our future with tearing down solar panels and beginning this whole wealth gap business. So I would suggest that somebody smiling with great self-satisfaction and doing damage to the world is not all there is to it. That's about it.
The man that wrote One Simple Idea, Mitch Horowitz, went on a crusade after the recent election to try to show the difference between what we now get by tweet and what new that really is.
Todd, thank you for your call. We're going to go to Patty calling from Naples. Hi, Patty. Go ahead.
Hi. I got interested in hypnosis because I had seen my dad do it, and I always said if I need to heal, I'm going to practice. And it's very similar. You get into a point where you're focusing and you're focusing on healing. And I actually underwent 3 surgeries. The reason that it's not that used is because you do have to train, like on a daily. I went to a hypnotherapist and I recorded a hypnotherapist. And so whenever I started feeling pain, I would replay that. And it puts you into, you're not asleep, it's similar to when you're driving and you don't focus where you're going, and all of a sudden you figure, how did I get here? Not if you're asleep, you're aware, but you're just focused on something. And if you turn those thoughts into the actual healing, I was able to prepare for my surgeries, you know, to have, for example, the surgical drains were removed faster. I had to take pain medication just one night at home. I had less bleeding during the surgery. All the signs that, you know, for recovery, the physical signs demonstrated that my healing was there, and my blood pressure on the day of surgery was normal.
Sure, Patty. Thank you so much for calling. And Dr. Wood, can you talk about, you know, we're talking about a lot of positivity, positive thoughts, but Patty's talking specifically about hypnosis and its effectiveness.
Mm-hmm. Hypnosis can be very effective. And essentially what hypnosis is, it influences you when you're not really trying to be influenced, if that makes sense. You're in a state between being awake and being asleep when you're more vulnerable to suggestion. That said, if you don't want to do something, you're not going to do it. So let's say someone who wants to quit smoking because their spouse wants them to quit, but they don't really want to. It's not going to work. So you have to really, really want it to work. And I also want to say, you know, a lot of these things, they work some of the time and not some of the time. And that includes positive thinking. So mm-hmm. there are plenty of people certainly who come to me who have been struck down by a lot of negative events in their life, including disease and injury and divorce and all sorts of things, who are really positive thinkers. You know, it doesn't always work. It's not magic.
All right. Well, Patty, thank you so much. We're going to go very quickly to Adita in Durham. We're almost to the end of the program, Adita. So if you could be quick, that would be great.
Yes. Speaking of things that work well, there's a Center for Scientific Good out in California. I think it's at UCLA. These are scientists that have been studying this process, and they have a program where you can take classes online, free classes, to learn how to see your life more positively and think more positively. And they also send you emails like every week with articles about the latest scientific studies and information that's come out.
Adita, that's great.
Very helpful.
If you have a link to that website, I welcome you to put that onto our Facebook page under today's post. Put it as a comment. Thank you so much for calling in. Before we go, though, I want to say to you, Reverend Newcomer, I understand you have a new book coming out, Quiet Fire, The Spiritual Life of Abraham Lincoln. Is there any evidence that Abe Lincoln used New Thought?
No. But he used good thought. And the book is called 30 Days with Lincoln, and it's a book of 30 meditations, and they will definitely help you change your life.
All right. Well, thank you all for being here today. What an interesting conversation. The voice you just heard was the Reverend Duncan Newcomer, an historian, psychotherapist, author, and minister. Also here, the Reverend Patricia Bessie, also a minister, a teacher, spiritual counselor, and certified life coach. And Dr. Amy Wood, psychologist, coach, and author of Life Your Way. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Ella Boyd, our intern, produced today's show. She also answered your calls. And today is her last day as Maine Calling intern. So thank you for everything, Ella. We're going to miss you. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources, by visiting mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Our theme music was composed by Mike Jandreau. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.